You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Get his bell away? Shh. Now Charlie.
Get his pedo, now Charlie. Ya sabes que a mí me vale. Get his pedo, now Charlie. Cause you know that I'm down for the highlight. Let's rock the boogie, let's get down. Get down. Knuckle up the boogie, you beat down. Beat down. Knuckle up the boogie, let's get down. Get down. Everybody gather round. Charlie, do you know what that means? Got my back against the wall.
Welcome to Suplexes and Cervezas with Chavo Guerrero Jr. I'm your host, Chavo Guerrero Jr. Hello and welcome to Suplexes and Cervezas with Chavo Guerrero Jr. I'm your host, Chavo Guerrero Jr. I hope everybody had a great weekend this past weekend. I know I did. I was in beautiful Laguna Beach, about 15 miles from my home, kind of a staycation, and got a really, really cool hotel that was right overlooking the ocean. Enjoyed some awesome food, some awesome drinks, and just some downtime. It was really, really good time. Very, very blessed to live where I live here in Southern California. On to the podcast. Today we have a guy that I used to wrestle with in WWE, Fred Rosser, who you might know him in WWE as Darren Young. Really, really good wrestler. I first met Darren when Eddie and I were in New York somewhere, I believe at the Long Island Arena, the old Long Island Arena where the Long Island Islanders play, the hockey team. We were doing a backstage vignette and they brought in one of the extra wrestlers that was there that night. This must have been like in 2002. They brought in Darren Young and he was just young, just must have been a 19-year-old, 20-year-old. He was playing a detective because, you know, we were, Eddie and I were doing the lie, cheat, and steal gimmick. And he was so stiff and so green and so young. It was really, really funny to see him early on in his career. And later on, he came into WWE. And in NXT, I was his mentor for a bit on the show, on the NXT show. But a lot of fun. Later on in WWE, after I had left already, Darren came out as the first openly gay superstar, wrestling superstar. And I believe Pat Patterson had come out earlier before, but he was not, of course, wrestling anymore. He was just an agent and writer with WWE. Freddie, as we call him, Freddie or Darren, you know, he came out and really showed that the courage that it takes to come out to do that and came out to the world, really, not just to the locker room. Proved to everyone that you can be tough and gay at the same time. So really, really proud of him. Good friend of mine. And a guy that I support very much. He's out doing his thing wrestling right now in New Japan Pro Wrestling and actually killing it, doing really, really good. And really, really support my friend. And I hope you listen and like this podcast. I'm sure you will, but it's a great listen. Check it out. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button and the like buttons and help us keep going. For my boy Fred Rosser, a.k.a. Darren Young, hey, block the hate, right, brother? So here you go, and enjoy this podcast, and God bless everybody, and let me know what you think.
So what's going on, man? Thanks for being here today.
I appreciate it, Chavo. I always say, don't die with a story, and you tell it. I should be calling you Coach Chavo, because we go way back, baby.
Coach Chavo. We do go way back, right? We did a little bit of that the NXT, what was it called? NXT Redemption. Like
but show. Our history goes way back to, as I explained on my podcast, Pro and Grow Wrestling, when I was an extra back in like 2004 or 5, you guys were like feuding with the Bashams. And I was, Michael Hayes still remembers to this day, so long ago, Detective Rosser. He still called me that even when I was signed.
No way.
Yeah, Detective Rosser, because that's how everyone remembered me, you know, and from doing that, Shad Gaspar was one of the guys that really would bring me into the locker room when I was so shy and timid. You know, he'd bring me into the locker room and he'd yell out to Ron Simmons, "Hey, Ron, I found your son here," because at the time I had an afro.
That's right. You know?
I had to bring it back with this whole pandemic, but Shad would always, you know, embarrass me in a good way. And that's how people got to know me.
That's funny, man. So let's tell a story real quick. By the way, I love the afro. It looks awesome. Looks good on you. Looks good. Looks good. I went the opposite way. I just totally shaved it off during this quarantine thing, but whatever. That's good.
Hey, if you got good hair, man, we got to embrace it.
Yeah, we got to embrace our good shaped noggins. Our heads are shaped well, so.
especially times like this, you know, I got to bring it back to back in the day, the 70s and the 80s. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's back, but it's back, man. It's back. You know what? It's like what's old is new again. You know, everybody loves that stuff, like clothes and haircuts. And like I saw a guy with a mullet the other day. And everybody was like, yeah, like it wasn't like, you know, when I finally cut my mullet off in, you know, 90, whatever it was, people were like, all right, thank God, get rid of that thing. But now everybody was embracing it. Like everybody was giving them high fives and loving it. And like, yeah, Joe Dirt.
Oh, goodness.
Let's tell a story. So me and Eddie tag teaming against, I believe it was the Bashams. Yes. We're doing a vignette backstage. I believe it was in Long Island.
Yes.
The arena there, right? And we had an extra playing a detective in our shoot. It was me and Eddie and you.
Yes.
And then what happened?
Well, and also this is when Vince McMahon was very hands-on with the backstage skits from watching as an extra. He was right there, you know? So it was very nerve-wracking for me.
So Vince was actually producing it.
Yeah, he was hands-on, and it was my first time as an extra being backstage with WWE, and I believe it was Ed Koski who came up to me and was like, can you play detective? And I confidently said yes, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, what the hell did I get myself into? Because me, I'm just a nervous guy. Once I'm around you, I warm up. There's layers to me, but to be thrown into it, I said, oh, my goodness. So I had simple lines, and that whole afternoon, I'm practicing, and then when we start rehearsing, I'm just flubbing up my lines, and after about, like, the 11th or 12th take, I finally got it right, but before then, Vince McMahon was like, you know, I'm buying the Bashams and the Guerreros, but I'm not buying this detective. What are we going to do about it? And then I remember it like it was today. It was like a pause. And I don't know who said, all right, let's do it again. And then we did it again, like on the 12th try. We watched it back and they were happy with that. And like, it was that moment when I realized, oh man, I might never have a chance with WWE again. But it was, you know, Uncle Eddie calming me down. Be calm, take it easy, just you know you guys are just calming me down, but I just was just nervous amongst you guys, you know.
Let it be natural,
yeah,
brother. Because
exactly,
you guys, you were
exactly.
So like, you were so stiff. I mean, you were sitting there like literally like you would like not move. You were like, and you went like very robotic, and we're like, dude, just calm, just relax, man, chill, take it easy, you know. That was funny.
I never thought I'd see you
I never thought I'd see you again. And before you know it, I see you in it wasn't NXT back then. What was it? Was it Florida Championship Wrestling, FCW, like the feeder territory?
Yeah, probably Florida Championship Wrestling. But it was Dr. Tom Pritchard at the time that would tell me whenever WWE is in the Northeast to just, you know, show up. If you get to do something, if you get to work, then you can get paid. You can ask, you know, Sergeant Slaughter at the time, who was in charge of the money, or Tony Garea, who was in charge of the money with the briefcase. If you work, you work. If you don't, don't ask for money. Don't ask for money. So I would always show up. That's how I probably over 40 times being an extra until I got that one yes, because the door got shut in my face so many times, and until I got that one yes. So it was Dr. Tom Pritchard, who I love, who would always encourage me to just show up. And then after a while, I think people got caught on to it. And then when your name wasn't on the list, they would immediately kick you out. So someone spoiled it for me. And it was actually, I love Tommy Dreamer, but eventually he took over, and then he had got word of me, you know, going and not being on the list. And then he contacted my trainer in New Jersey saying that I couldn't show up to TVs anymore. So I was devastated. I had to be invited.
Oh,
I was devastated. Yeah. But yeah, I had to do what I had to do. And it was May 4th, 2009, out of 75 guys and girls from all over the world, I finally earned my contract with WWE. 4 days, I was a madman.
You know what? I love that, man. I love that you actually didn't take no for an answer, and you kept pushing and kept pushing and kept pushing. And everybody out there listening, that's what it's about. Every one of us, including me, including Eddie, including, I mean, everybody, like Michael Jordan didn't make his high school basketball team as a freshman. They didn't take no for an answer. You kept pushing and kept going. So don't take no, and just keep at it, man. That's awesome, man. My hats off to you for that.
Yeah, you know, I always use this one line I got from Denzel: without commitment, you'll never start. But most importantly, without consistency, you'll never finish. So from 2002, September 11th, 2002 will be 18 years that I've been wrestling. So I'll be celebrating that tomorrow, actually. From 2002 to 2009, I grinded on the independence, working in the Northeast, New York, doing what I had to do, working quality over quantity, because I don't want to beat my body up. And when I get signed, then I'm all beat up. So that's how I was taught, quality over quantity. And eventually I got signed May 4th, 2009, and June 25th, 2009, the same day Michael Jackson died, was the first day I stepped foot into FCW. Again, nervous again. I'm just new to FCW, and everyone's right. Phone is blown up about Michael Jackson's passing. So that's how my journey started.
Wow, man. That's a great story, man. That's awesome. Say that quote again from Denzel.
Without commitment, you'll never start. But most importantly, without consistency, you'll never finish.
That's awesome.
So
I want that to get lost in the shuffle. I want people to listen to that. That's great.
Yeah. And it's so true. You have to be consistent, and it's not easy. It is just not easy. If it was easy, everyone would be doing it.
That's right.
So my story isn't a story of a guy that just got off the football field and then immediately got signed. You know, I got told no over 40 times by WWE until I got that one yes. So you have to be consistent. And my high school yearbook, the last sentence I said was WWF, here I come, in 2002. So I was like tunnel vision right out of high school and college. Yes. I joined the wrestling school in New Jersey, and I just learned that 80s style. Calling it in the ring. Then after a couple of years, I'm like, oh, I'm getting tired of calling it in the ring. So that's when I ventured off to other schools to learn how to plan stuff, learn how to do a Japanese style match, you know, learn that style. Because again, Dr. Tom Pritchard would always say, wrestling is all ice cream, just different flavors. So I learned the 80s style when I first started. I wanted to learn Japanese style. I wanted to learn all the styles.
That's the way you do it, man. That's we always say that the Guerrero style is a combination of everything that we learned. My grandfather told me that this business is called wrestling. So if you know how to wrestle, you're always going to have a job. So that's why we learned how to wrestle as heels. We learned how to wrestle as baby faces. We learned how to wrestle as singles, as tag teams, with small men, with big men, the American style, the Japanese style, the Mexican style, the European style. We tried to learn everything so that we could always have a job and pivot. So when, if they needed a tag team, we're there. If they needed a heel, we're there. If they needed a baby face, we were able to do that also.
Wow.
That's something that I anytime I do like a seminar, I'm always telling people, learn how to work with your opponent and adapt to your opponent, adapt to your circumstances, because you can't expect them to adapt to you, because if they can't, then you guys are screwed. But if you're in the ring and you can work with anybody, like I said, a big man, a small man, you know, a Lucha Libre style, American style, brawling, punching, wrestling, well, then you can always have a good match. You're able to have a good match with anybody because you can adapt to their style.
Yeah, you know, I had Tyson Kidd on my podcast recently.
Yeah.
And he said one of the biggest honors is the respect of your peers, you know, being able to get in the ring with someone and be like, oh, I'm not too sure about it. And then afterwards, man, this guy really elevated me, you know. One of the biggest compliments I've gotten recently was being able, 2019, share the ring with Sean Spears. And then when he came back after our match, he's like, man, I needed that. Man, I'm just getting goosebumps just talking about it. That's the biggest compliment for me. I love the fans and all that stuff, but the peers, you know, guys that can be like, man, you brought the best out of me. And that's always my goal. You know, if I'm a opening match type of guy, I'm going to maximize my reaction in the shortest bit of time. And if the people are watching and the match is over, I want them to be on the edge of their seats, you know? So my goal is to always highlight the opponent, hide any weaknesses, highlight their strengths, and get the biggest reaction I can in the shortest amount of time if I'm doing an opening match or any type of match.
That's the way to be, man. That's awesome. You were you're born in Jersey.
Are you Dirty you Jersey. Also?
Dirty yeah, Jersey. Dirty, I had a lot of good times in Jersey.
Dirty Jersey. I love it, man. I didn't move out till I got signed in 2009. And then I moved from Jersey to Tampa, Tampa to Miami. I lived in Miami for many years, traveling with Big Show in and out of the airport. And sorry, I get sidetracked. But the one thing I love about living in Miami with the Big Show is, like, at least four times, somehow he got me upgraded to first class. I'm like, I don't know how he did it, but he somehow got me upgraded. So I loved living in Miami. But yeah, Jersey is where I grew up. And I say Dirty Jersey because I get that from Whitney Houston. Everyone would always say, oh, where are you from? Oh, Dirty Jersey. So I stole it from her.
Yeah, yeah. Much respect and love to Jersey. It just, you know, a lot of times people say it, you know, and I love Jersey. It's great. Great people and good times. I've had a lot of good times. I've been to the Starlight Diner once or twice over there in Elizabeth.
Oh yeah. Known for the diners. Yeah, I get it.
Well, the Starlight Diner too, is so boys would go all the time because it was open late. It's close to the airport, and we're staying by the airport. It was open late, but then it had a strip club connected to it. Actually connected to it. So we would actually go have, you know, whatever it is, you know, it could be, you know, 12 o'clock at night, and we'll, you know, eat, you know, an omelet or whatever. And then we could go to the strip club. Not that I would go, but I heard people would go. No, it was a good, they knew us there too. Like the manager would know us there and come in, and it was always a good time. I was just kind of hanging out, and, you know, I got kicked out a couple times.
Oh goodness.
Always fun. Did you grow up a wrestling fan?
Oh, since I came out the womb, you know, I was born.
Oh, nice.
November 2nd, 1983. My dad was a big wrestling fan. So I was just mesmerized by Hulk Hogan and those guys, Andre the Giant. And, you know, my dad would always record it, and we had tons of VHS tapes. So I would watch and over and over again study the matches. Just one name that pops in my head in particular, I always enjoyed watching Shane Douglas, like, and how he spoke. Like, I didn't understand why he was just so good, but as a kid I would just listen to him talk, and I didn't realize that he was a school teacher at one time, but he was just so articulate with his words and just, you know, the way he wrestled, just a baby face that sold. And I always was drawn to the wrestlers that were like, just selling. Brad Armstrong is one of my personal favorites. I still watch today, not for the moves, but the way he moves, the way he gets in the ring.
Yeah, he was special.
Yeah. just the way he moved and sold, it was just very different. And that's, you know, and we'll get into it. That's what I bring to the table now with New Japan. You know, they can see, man, he sells, he delivers. But guys, like I said, Brad Armstrong, I was a huge fan of Bobby Eaton growing up. I didn't know why, but Bobby was just so, the way he sold, the way he threw that punch, the way he delivered moves. I was just drawn to those guys. Of course, a plethora of other superstars.
Yeah, Bobby Eaton was one of those guys that, being in the most known for the Midnight Express that he was in back in the NWA territory in Charlotte and Georgia and kind of everywhere, very, very famous tag team. He's a guy that with the wrestlers has a huge amount of respect. Everybody knows how good Bobby Eaton was. And if you weren't a fan in that era, then you may not know who Bobby Eaton is. And fans are like, oh, okay. But I remember him, you know, just doing some jobs in WCW. This guy was so good. I remember he used to wrestle my dad back in the day. I got to wrestle him one time in WCW at a must have been a Saturday night taping or something like that. First of all, he talks like this, and he kind of couldn't understand what he was saying.
I've heard that.
That's the way he talks, but he's the best. So basically, we just kind of went out there and called it in the ring, or I just sat and listened, and he called it in the ring. But I couldn't understand what he was saying. So he goes, "Joe, hey, can you give me one of them uppercuts?" I'm in the ring, locking, and I'm tied up with him, and I'm like, "What?" He goes, "You know, give me one of them uppercuts." I said, "Uppercut?" And he said, "What's that?" So I give him an uppercut. Oh my God! I thought I shot him with a bazooka. Gave him an uppercut. He took a bump and backed off, and the people popped like crazy. And I kind of fired up, and I was kind of first after I did, I was surprised, like, "Wow! Oh, fire up!" So I fired up. Yeah, he backed off, and I was like, "Wow, this guy is so good." And then you know, a couple other things we did, whatever. And then when I got done with the match, and the match was basic, it was easy. Yes. We didn't do a whole bunch of things. When I got in the back, Prince Iaukea pulled me over and goes, "Man, Chavo, your fire was amazing. It was great." And I'm like, "That wasn't me, man. That was all Bobby."
Yes.
Bobby did everything. That's how good he actually was.
Yeah, and as a kid, I just didn't know why. I just didn't know why I enjoyed watching him when he would take that post and he just made such a snap with it. I just didn't know why I liked him, you know. But now that's the biggest compliment. Coming from the back, like I said, the respect to your peers.
Yeah. In wrestling, there is, like, so compare wrestling to Star Wars. There is no Darth Vader without Luke Skywalker. Luke Skywalker selling for Darth Vader and crawling makes Darth Vader who he is. And without, in wrestling, if there's no selling with that from the babyface, there's no heel. And then vice versa, if there's no registering from the heel, in that certain time, there's no baby face. So that's all storyline. It's all what we're doing in the ring is telling stories. We're not wrestling and telling, you know, doing moves and stuff. And same with any other sport, you're telling a story in there. You're making the people feel. So in wrestling, thank God we're able to do that and kind of control that. But if wrestling, there is no Darth Vader if there's not a Luke Skywalker. So you young wrestlers, remember that. You're going to hear it 5 million times. It's not the moves. The moves are great. They help tell the story, but they are not the story.
Absolutely. Like after my release from WWE in 2017, I've always liked him, but in my head, I said, moving forward, quality over quantity since day one. I always envision myself, and no one knows, the crowd doesn't know, I always envision myself being the Black Randy Orton, meaning the way he gets in the ring, the way he throws one punch, one kick, a headbutt, he just switches it up. It's not boom, 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 boom. It's just different strikes, the in-between stuff. So I try to, you know, visualize myself being him in my own way. So, yeah, that's amazing.
I say, I say that a lot with Randy and other podcasts that I've done. Randy is one of the top out there. He's so good. And again, it's not that what he does, it's how he does it.
Yeah.
Randy does, you know, 5 or 6 moves. That's what in his, sure he could do more, but he only does 5 or 6 and he does them so good and he does them at the right time. It means everything.
Yes. So, I mean, yeah, anytime I do clinics, I always say, if you want to watch past guys, watch Bobby Eaton. If you want to watch current guys, watch Randy Orton. Again, not for what moves he does, but just the in-between stuff. You know, if he's going to deliver a suplex to someone, he takes his time. And then when he's up there, he just goes. And it just looks so smooth. There's no slipping. He just has you. You know what I mean? So I've got to share the ring with him just once. And I remember he got very upset with Titus because Titus did something. I don't know. And then I got tagged in and I grabbed a hold and Randy, I got to keep it PG, but
yeah,
Randy said, oh, you need to tell your partner how to work. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Tell your partner how to fucking work. Here, I'll say it.
Yeah, that's exactly what he said. I have my earphones on, so that's perfect. That's exactly what he said.
Exactly. Yeah, man. Well, and it's funny because Titus he's so strong. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Titus was such a strong guy, strong man that, you probably don't want to say it to Titus. I'll say it to his partner, but not to him, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome, you know, man.
Yeah. And then speaking of Titus, like when he came to, I got signed to FCW and probably a couple months later, off football, out of football or whatever, he came into FCW and he got signed. Dave Batista referred him to Steve Kern and that's how it all took off. And when he started training, no one wanted to get in the ring with him except for me. I would be the first one there to work out with him in the ring and the last one to leave to just tell him, hey, big man, you don't, he's not a Keith Lee, you know, but you just need to just stand in the middle and then we'll just bounce off you, you know. You throw a clothesline, stay in the center, you throw a boot, and I'll just recoil off you, you know. So I was there helping him. So that's one thing that he'll always bring up that I helped him in the ring. The way he helped me out in the ring was, I would say the most intimidating thing about Vince McMahon is his office door. He would barge in there and say, hey, boss, what you got for us? So closed mouths don't get fed. I learned that from Titus, you know, to sometimes you just got to bust in the door and let the boss know what you want, you know. So that's, he learned from me. I learned from him.
Right. And let's tell the truth why people didn't want to wrestle Titus. Because he just sweats so damn much. But I just as a joke, is kidding. But man, I never seen somebody sweat like him. Like he would literally be working out and just water would just be dripping off him. I go, man, we got to get you like an IV or something, man. Because man, the ring is wet, man. It's crazy. That's funny, right?
And I would tell Titus, because when we would do tag matches on live events, it's always like 80-20. He does the hot tag and I'm taking heat, which I love, you know.
Right.
But you know, he's eating, like he's sitting down eating right before the match. I'm pacing back and forth, biting my nails, like making sure I have my stuff and making sure he has his stuff, you know what I mean? And he's just relaxing. And then there would be times I'd be like, hey, you're taking the heat tonight, big man. Oh, what do you mean? No. You're taking the heat tonight because I'm tired of it. You got to put in some work, man, because I'm taking the heat and doing all the driving, even though he hooked it up with the hotels and Titus had to hook up on a lot of things. But I'm like, man, my body's beat up, man. I need a break.
Yeah, man. He's a Titus O'Neil. If you don't know who he is, look him up because he's a great wrestler, great humanitarian. A legend in the Florida football area. Like, oh my God, he was like the man for a long time.
Yeah, he sure was. But this interview ain't about him, it's about me.
That's right, Titus, you suck. I just kidding. Hey man, yeah. So who trained you? How'd you break in? Who trained you? Like, did you grow up and start wrestling in the Jersey area or what happened?
Well, I did backyard wrestling because I was just like crazy hooked into this type of work, this type of business. But I joined a little wrestling school in the Northeast. IWF Wrestling School, Independent Wrestling Federation. I was trained by a guy that never made it to the business, but he had a good sense of like, make sure you have, you know, clean gear, make sure you have boots, make sure you have a tan, make sure you have 8x10s, all that stuff. He made sure that it was professional. And he taught me that 80s style, how to call in the ring and how to watch how the old timers perform. So I got a great education with Kevin, and Kevin Knight was his name, the owner, the trainer. So I got great education with him, and he gave me a lot of great shots with WWE as an extra. The first legend I got to work was Honky Tonk Man. So I learned a lot from him, how to take your time and all that man. Stuff. What's that?
Just shut up and listen, kid.
Yes, yes.
We got some good stories of Honky Tonk.
Yes, man. And I did just that.
He's awesome. What a character in and out of the ring. Wayne Ferris, Honky Tonk Man, a legend in the business, and a guy that's a legend out of the business too.
Oh, absolutely. From the time I wrestled him in 2003, he remembered me still to this day because I think, you were there. Earlier this year, we did at the LAX hotel, something like that. We did like a convention before the pandemic, but he was there and he remembered me from earlier in my career. And when I shared the ring with him, he always said, you know, because my name back in the day was Fred Sampson. He was like, you know, that's Sampson. He's going to be somebody someday, you know? So he said that early in my career. And then when I see him earlier this year, he's just like, gives me a big hug and so nice. And I'm like a little kid, you know, because I don't care how long I've been doing this. I'm still, I fanboy over Kurt Angle. I fanboy over all the OGs. Like, it doesn't matter. Kurt Angle was one of my favorite wrestlers growing up. So anytime I'm around these guys' presence, I'm just fanboying.
I agree. How did you get the call to WWE and going, and tell us that story?
Yeah, so I did a 4-day tryout. It was like my last resort, because if I hadn't gotten signed with WWE, most likely I was thinking about giving up. You know, it was either WWE or the fire department. You know, I was going to be a firefighter. I was number 3 on the list, but I did this last tryout with WWE, a paid tryout. Tryouts nowadays, you get invited and it is what it is, but I had to pay to do a tryout. So they wanted serious people. And I remember before I got signed, I was doing a Frederick of Hollywood gimmick where I had a fur coat. I had flashing sunglasses. My hair was spiky up. I was like a South Beach party boy. So I remember when I got to the tryout, it was 4 days and I was like a madman. And then probably like the third day is when we had to do promos. And I was nervous. I was kind of hesitant because one, I wasn't out publicly. I was still closeted. So I was kind of nervous about being, you know, flamboyant and feminine and all that stuff in character for the tryout. So I kept all that fancy stuff out in the rental car. And I remember sitting there in FCW, and I'm like shaking. I'm like, man, I got to do it. I got to show them what I got. And I remember running out to my car and getting all of my props and all that stuff. And when it came to promos, all eyes were on me, and I nailed it. And I nailed it from the promo to the 4 days. I just killed it. And I remember Pat Patterson sitting in the control room at Florida Championship Wrestling. And like, he was probably supposed to be quiet, but he loudly said, "Oh, I like him. He got a good look. So yeah. I could hear that. I'm like, oh man. So the fourth day, when, you know, they were really looking at me, it was Steve Kern that had brought me into the office and said, "Oh, we're looking at signing you." And I just lit up. I said, "I'm ready to go. I'm clean. I'm not on anything, you know." I got signed May 4th, 2009. December 2008 was the last time I ever took a enhancement supplement.
Sure.
And Steve Kern said, "All right, well, that's what we were concerned about," because I was in great shape, you know, but I was clean as a whistle. So ultimately I got signed. The same day I got signed, was the same day AJ Lee got signed. So she's crying her eyes out. And two Jersey people got signed the same day. So and we were the only ones that got signed that day. Other people might have got called up, but we were the two that got signed, and then it just took off. And I remember Ken Kennedy that afternoon that I got signed, because I stayed after. Like, I'm already signed. Like, why? After the trot's over at 3, what am I going to do? Like, go party somewhere? No, I wasn't a partier. I just, like, stayed there. And I remember Ken Kennedy, he was working out in the ring, maybe coming back from an injury. But I don't know. But he congratulated me on getting signed. And he said, well, when are you moving down? I said, oh, I don't know. He said, you better move down as soon as possible. So that's when I moved. I got signed May 4th, and I moved to Tampa in June, and then the rest was history. So I was amongst the guys, Alberto Del Rio, Sheamus, Trent Beretta, Justin Gabriel. These guys, we were all training in the morning, crisscrossing and doing drills and all that stuff. My life took off forever, man. And you know,
that's a great group right there, man. That's a great group. All those guys you named were, you know, were all great wrestlers and people that have been in the business for a long time.
Sure. So just being amongst these guys, I was very blessed. But eventually, NXT, the show came about, the first season of NXT, and they were looking for guys, and I was hungry. I was always the first one there, last one there, and developmental, because I wanted it. And eventually I got the call from John Laurinaitis about being a part of the first season of NXT, and then it took off.
Right. Circling back a little bit, man, something you said. So tell me about, how was your coming out in an industry that not necessarily had many gay people in it, but people that hadn't come out, and maybe until after they were wrestlers, but you were like the first active WWE performer to publicly come out.
Yeah, I mean, I was at the top. In my mind, in my heart, I was at the top of the mountain. I finally achieved my dream with WWE in 2009. But fast forward to maybe 2012, I was living in Miami, and then I found love, you know, so I was living a double life. You know, when I'm in Miami, I'm doing my thing. When I'm on the road, I'm just, you know, I'm just one of the boys trying to fit in. And I was just tired of living a lie, and it was just eating me up inside. And I ultimately came out to the world, and it was the best decision. Best decision I ever made, because I didn't have to hide anymore. I didn't have to cut wrestling promos like this to sound more masculine, to deepen my voice. I didn't have to do that anymore. I could just be me. I could be able to bring my partner. I don't like using the word partner. People say, oh, my partner. I wanted to be able to bring my boyfriend to WWE red carpet. I wanted to be able to bring him backstage into the masculine world of professional wrestling. And I was able to do that. Everyone at the time, my boyfriend, his name was Nicky, I would bring him backstage. Everyone was so nice to him, from Brooklyn Brawler to Harvey Whippleman, Bruno, just everyone from production to the superstars were just so nice to him. And I was happy. I didn't have to, girls are great, you know, but I didn't have to bring a girlfriend to the red carpet for
and play the game and live that lie. Yeah, man.
I just wanted to just be me, and so I ultimately sacrificed my WWE career to ultimately inspire others to be and accept themselves. So, you know, I always say my fight is much more bigger than in the ring. It's outside of the ring, fighting bigotry and hatred, and, you know, trying to be the voice of the voiceless when it comes to the LGBTQ community or anyone that gets bullied into silence. So, yeah, you know, from guys like Randy Orton, Big Show, Mark Henry, those guys made it a lot easier for me to walk into a locker room. I remember before I came out and I was new to the roster, just coming up, walking into the locker room, I had a gold sequence around my head. And I remember Mark Henry. We all know, and I could talk crap about Mark Henry.
Sure.
But I drove him around for 5 years. You know what I mean? So yeah. I remember walking into a locker room, and he's just sitting there long-winded. Hey, boy, why you got your hair like that? It makes you look gay. And that's what he told me, you know, before mm-hmm. I even came out. And I was stuttering over my words. I said, Mark, I'm just trying to look different. I'm just trying to stand out. And fast forward to when I came out, he was one of the first guys that called me up. Hey, man, how come you didn't tell me? I got cousins that are gay, man. I love you, you know? So it was guys like him and I said Randy Orton who embraced me with open arms, you know, gave me a hug and, you know, supported me. CM Punk, this was when 2013, when he had his match with Brock Lesnar. He was all iced up and he came up to me at the Staples Center in catering, and he told me to stand up because I'm watching a show. I stood up, and he said, give me a hug. So I gave CM Punk a hug, and he said, I heard about you coming out, man. It's very courageous. If you have any problems with anyone in the locker room, you let me know. And that meant the world to me because he was my first coach on the first season of NXT, and we didn't say hardly anything to each other because, you know, CM Punk is CM Punk, you know? So right. Like me, I'm being shy and all that stuff. So two total like opposites, but for him to do that in 2013, it meant the world to me. So anytime I talk about my coming out story and people that supported me in WWE, he's one story I always talk about.
You know, man, you're a role model and an inspiration for so many people, whether it be LG, you know, BDQ,
yeah,
or anything. People that are having problems and are trying to find themselves, you're like a huge inspiration for that. And I really mean that. And that's something why I wanted to have you on my podcast, because I just wanted you to know what you mean to not just the world of wrestling, but the world in general, man. Yeah. It's something that's very, very courageous. That's something that'll be looked up to. That's something that when I heard, I was like, man, gosh, dude. I was like, I'm happy for you. And I feel for you that you had to you had to keep it in the shadows for, you know, a long time, for a lot of your life, for your professional career. And it's tough, man, because If I look at it from a different point of view, from my point of view, if I wasn't able to tell anybody that I like girls or whatever I like, that would be hard, man. That'd be really, really, really hard. And so, man, I just got to tell you, man, just, you know, if I had a hat on, I'd take it off to you, man.
You know, I always say, think of your most downest moment in your life and times about 10. That's how I felt. I'm 36. At 30 years old, when I came out, I just was tired of living a lie. And I wanted to be able to have my cake and eat it too. I wanted to be able to live my dream as a WWE superstar, but also personally, I wanted to be able to love whoever I wanted to love. And finally, I was able to do that. So Travel, I always say with my story, I'm not a doctor or a psychiatrist, but I am a friend. And when I've met a handful of fans, either at the airport or at the hotel, and they contact me months later on social media saying that they want to commit suicide, that's when I have to kind of like start sending video messages, talking them out of it. One guy in particular, he was a fan and he was a straight guy. He was an ally. I had met him. He had broke up with his girlfriend at the time, and he told me he was having thoughts of suicide. And then that's when I had to send messages and all that stuff to talk him out of it. He appreciated it. Probably a year and a half later, he had contacted me and said, oh, I have a new girlfriend. Well, actually a new fiance. He was going to be getting married. So I was so happy for him. So just imagine, I could have possibly saved a life. So again, you know, this fan that I met, I could have just threw his story under the rug and not said anything, deleted the DM, not taking him seriously, and then he would have committed suicide. That's terrible. That's why I always say my fight is much more bigger than in the ring. It's outside the ring, doing what I do.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
For sure, man. I get exactly what you're saying with that, with fans and being able to reach out to them and help them in a small different way, on a different avenue as yours. My the Latino community comes up to me a lot, and they used to come to me and Eddie all the time, but they always say, you know, hey, thank you for doing what you do for La Raza, for, you know, for our people, because we don't have a lot of people in the, you know, in pro sports, in, you know, in Hollywood or whatever, and you're representing us. So when I started getting that, and Eddie too, when we first started getting that, backstory before that, we just wanted to be wrestlers like our family, man. We just wanted to like follow in their footsteps, and that's it. Like, we just like, we lived, breathed, ate wrestling. We had a wrestling ring in the backyard. That's what we did. So for us to be able to touch people and have them say that we represent them, man, it's like, first of all, it feels like, wow, it feels great. It's like, okay, whoa, okay. Now we need to start rethinking our decisions, because I'm not just making a decision for myself. I'm making a decision for almost a group, a community, in a sense. So I definitely feel what you're saying and a difference, you know, a different plane, but
yeah,
for sure, man. And that's something that man, I admire very much.
Well, like you said, representation is so important. Representation to me is so important. Since coming out, I've been able to pave the way for other LGBTQ athletes.
That's
like
right.
Sonya Deville, Jake Atlas, who's making moves in NXT. I always say, though, not to toot my own horn, but by being the first openly gay WWE
toot it,
superstar.
Toot it, man, toot it.
Yeah. Exactly. By being the first, I've been able to pave the way for other LGBTQ athletes in wrestling and beyond to come out and live their life and not allow the opinions of others to derail them on their journey to greatness. And, you know, by being the first, other LGBTQ athletes that come out, they now have a duty to instill confidence in our youth and to lead by example. So that's why my whole Block the Hate movement is so important and so meaningful to me. You know, the Block the Hate movement that I started when I came out is, in this world, we all receive hate for various reasons, but in order to be strong and successful, you've got to block the hate. And I always say, at the end of the day, I want this to be the next middle finger. It's the equality sign for all. You tell me I can't achieve my dreams because I'm overweight or I have a speech problem or something like that. Well, you know what? Block the hate. So that's my message to the world.
I love that, man. There's something to be said, being true to yourself more than, you know, your neighbor or what people think. But when you're true to yourself, I think that's everything. You know, that means everything.
Yeah. And like, I don't know what people are thinking. If you're not going to have a match, I'm coming to work to fight. You know what I mean? I don't care what you do behind closed doors. You shouldn't care what I care, what I do behind closed doors. We're coming to fight, and we're coming to see who's going to go to the pay window. You know what I mean? I'm not worrying about all that stuff, you know?
It shouldn't matter. It doesn't matter. And I say this a lot. It doesn't matter to me if you're white, you're black, you're brown, you're purple. It doesn't matter if you're gay, straight, if you're a woman, if you're a man. If you're cool, you're cool. You're an asshole. You're an asshole. It doesn't matter. And that, I think that should be the only time that you actually don't want to be around somebody, is if they're just a jerk, an asshole. Okay. Get out of my face, you know, but it shouldn't matter what, you know, color, creed, sexual preference, it shouldn't matter that. And that's something that I think sometimes for me, and it's almost a fault that I fight for that a lot. To where when I see somebody being bullied or mistreated, and in a sense that like I don't stop. I keep, you know, that's like, that's my thing to help those persons. Cause I remember the times that I wasn't treated right, you know, then it hurt me, you know, being either being a, being discriminated against as a Latino, or, you know, being, you're too small, you're too short, or bullied by a big guy, man, I still to this day that irks me so much. And now that I can kind of do something about it, sometimes I shouldn't do something about it, but man, it just bothers me. It's like, man, just love. When did love and respect go out of style? Right. It's something that we have to bring back, that love and respect, and not even talking about political climate and all that kind of stuff that's going on right now. But it's like, man, we just gotta, man, just like, I may not agree with you, but like, I love you. Until you're not deserving of my love, until you're pushing me to not love you, you know, saying, come on, guys, I'd rather buy you a beer than punch you in the face.
Yes, I agree. Ditto to that. I don't drink anymore. I haven't drunk since August 2017 when I moved out to LA full time, because I don't want to have to be dependent on it. Even with WWE, like, people ask me, what was your favorite city to visit? I always say my entire memory on the indies and with WWE, I remember some, but a lot of it is very foggy, because I still talk about it to this day when I do interviews, about me personally having drinking problems. I would drink before matches. I would drink before Be a Stars. You know, if you have a Be a Star at 9 a.m., I would be up 6:30 having my Tito's vodka with some Crystal Light, like, you know, to kind of.
That's crazy, man. No one knew. I didn't know. Yeah. You just looked normal to me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I just hit it so well. I had gum in my mouth. I would brush my teeth before I left the hotel room. So I didn't want to have to be dependent on that when I came out to LA full time. So I always say I traded Tito's vodka for green tea. So if when bars were open and I had to be there for an event, like, I would always go to the bar and say, do you guys have any hot tea, green tea, any tea? And two times I had to be at a bar because of work. They provided me with tea and I was having a good time. I don't need any of that stuff. So me personally, right. I always say, you can drink all you want, Chavo. Just don't be violent with me or anyone else. I'm running.
No, totally. Well, like right now, this Suplexes and Cervezas with Chavo is right now Suplexes and Champagne. I'm drinking a little bit of bubbly right now.
Well, if I was there in person doing the podcast with you, I would say instead of me doing a shot to that, you would have to do a shot to apple cider vinegar. That would be my shot that we would do.
That's a tough one, man. Can you pick something that at least tastes a bit like just regular green tea or some chamomile or something like that, man?
No, it's got to be apple cider vinegar, because
apple cider vinegar. Oh my gosh.
Coach Bob Backlund got me onto that, and I still do it to this day.
Really?
Yeah.
Yep, that's awesome, man. That's awesome.
But
going back to
what's that? Go ahead.
No. I'll edit that. I'll edit that out. Go ahead. Go on.
No, I was just gonna go into.
Do it, please, man, please. Go ahead. We'll edit. No, we'll edit all that out. Go ahead.
I forget what I was gonna ask you now. Forget it.
Coach Backlund, and is Coach Backlund? You're saying something. All right, we'll go into. So let's go back to the Nexus, and you're part of that. That faction that was actually, it burnt out way before that it should have, but man, made a huge impact when you guys did.
Yeah. I mean, the Nexus had a galvanic effect. Again, another thing that I was kind of thrusted into from the first season of NXT. It was a night that I'll never forget in Miami, Florida. I remember all the Nexus members were in an office with Vince and Michael Hayes and then maybe Dean Malenko, and they were just kind of mapping out what exactly we would be doing. And Vince said, if anything looks weak, If anything, if there are any hiccups, you know, you're going to be fired. So that was like the threats that were being thrusted onto us. I don't know if you've ever been, threatened like that, but yeah, like we were told by Vince, if stuff looks weak, you're going to get fired. So we had to deliver.
So you guys are coming to play, man. You guys are laying it in. Cause it looked like, wow, you guys are bringing it. I was like, damn, you guys tore up the ring. And if anybody who's listening had not known what the Nexus was a bunch of these guys that were at the NXT, the training facility for WWE. And they came up and made a huge impact and like jumped, I think it was John Cena or who it was?
Yeah.
You guys beat up everybody, and you guys beat up Justin Roberts, the announcer, and tore the ring up and stuff. And it was like an impact. And we were all in the back going, wow, these guys, this is awesome. They came to play. The crowd was stunned. They were quiet. It's what you call in wrestling white heat, where there's so much heat that they shut up and they just watch like, whoa, this is crazy. Great.
Oh, I never heard of that. I never heard of that white heat. And it's rare.
Yeah, it can't get a mistaken because there's a quiet heat also to where you're getting heat and people either don't care or they want to change the channel. That's not good. But white heat is when they're so in awe. They're just sitting there watching and they're just like, wow, like we're not, our eyes can't leave, but our mouths don't work.
Yeah, yeah.
Good. That's very rare.
And I remember I was in charge of Mike Eaton. I'm sure you remember him. Mike Eaton was the timekeeper.
Mark Eaton, yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I said Mike, yes. Mark Eaton.
No, Mark Eaton, yes, sir. Yes, great guy.
Yeah, I was in charge of like knocking him out. And I remember it like it was yesterday. I could see the fear in his eye. I wasn't going to kill him. Like, I mean, come on.
This is not a wrestler. This is a guy that's a timekeeper that's been with WWE for probably 20 or 30 years. That's the timekeeper, and he's down there that just was really there to give us signals and stuff. And now that all of a sudden you have this big, jacked up, mad brother that's going to beat your ass.
Exactly. It is what it is. I grabbed him. I could see the fear in his eyes. And as I was punching him, He was already like falling, so I had to follow through so it looked good on camera. And then after they edited the footage for like highlights and stuff like that, they sped up the footage, you know. But he was already falling. He did not want of this. He did not want none of that. And good thing I followed through. But yeah, we caused havoc. It's just unfortunate it didn't last as long. I think from our story, they learned their mistakes, and you know, you have the Shield that did incredible things. But yeah, with the Nexus, I'll never talk bad about the moment because I'm happy that we did it. You know, one thing about me I talk about on podcasts is I'm not going to be one of those grizzled vets that talks bad about the company. Me, I had great experiences in WWE that I'm very happy, and great experiences with Vince McMahon. You know what I mean? He gave me an opportunity to do my Bob Backlund and make Darren Young great again. So he heard me out loud and clear. So I'm happy with my experiences with WWE.
Yeah, you know what? That's one of those things that it's such a weird subject, a touchy subject, because for everything that's great about WWE, there's things that aren't, and people will do, and then that's like with any job, of course, but people will dwell on that, you know, and everybody's guilty of it. I'm guilty of it.
Yes.
The way you look at it, like I always say that there's no way I'd be able to do what I'm doing now in Hollywood and behind the scenes and stuff without the tutelage and the guidance of Vince McMahon. I've learned so much from them, and without them even really teaching me, just me observing him, being in the truck and watching everybody, you know, all the guys there. And hold on, who was the name of the guy that the director? Kevin Dunn. And watching like Kevin Dunn and everybody there, like, it was it's something that it really helped me out through my Hollywood career, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, you know, if I were to talk it again, I've had great moments and I've had some upsetting moments. One upsetting moment was the first time I think we were going to Abu Dhabi. And at first, me and Lana were on the tour and we were ready to go. And then they took us off the tour and I was just upset, you know. Abu Dhabi is not really accepting of women and the LGBTQ movement. So I was very upset. And of course, I went to Twitter on purpose and I was booty hurt. I was boo-booing and like, oh, I'm very upset that, you know, WWE is going to Abu Dhabi. I wonder why they're going to Abu Dhabi. Hashtag millions of dollars, because that's what our catchphrase Titus and I were. Hashtag millions of dollars. So I was just upset. And I remember the social media police in WWE, they contacted me and said, oh, do you mind taking down that tweet? I said, no. I said, if anyone has a problem with it, they can call me up if they have a problem with it. A couple of minutes later, I get a New Hampshire number. And that's, I guess that's Triple H's personal number. So he called me up and he was like, the whole time he was like, you know, Darren, we're just, you know, worried about your safety. But at the time I was just upset. You know, I wanted to go to Abu Dhabi. Why are you going over there? So again, we have great moments and we have moments like that, you know, that upset me.
Well, that goes back to you, you know, block the hate and standing up for what is right. Unfortunately, the rest of a lot of the world has not embraced those yet, you know, and we're still having some trouble here in the United States, you know. So hopefully one of these days we can get past all that and we can actually, just like I said, love each other, man. It doesn't matter who you are, what you do, and just love, man. That's, I don't know why that's not so, it's not hard, man. It feels good.
Don't get me started, Chava. Don't get me started. That's why I always say, every time my feet touch the ground, I know someone's counting on me. If someone asks me about what our current president is doing in an interview, I'm going to say, you know, unfortunately, I can't control what our president does. I can only control my actions. And that's every great. Time my feet touch the ground, someone's counting on me every morning. So that's why my whole Block the Hate movement is so meaningful to me. That's, you see how I pivot that back to me? I can't talk about what's going on. We know what's going on. This interview is about me. See, that's that WWE media training that helped me out a lot. You
know? Yeah, that's right. I love it.
You know, you can keep going back to him, but it's going to be about me, myself, and I. So, and that's one thing. WWE, when I first came out, they threw media training on me. And at the time I was like, you're not going to tell me what to say. I'm going to say whatever I want, you know, but it really helped me out. It helped me gather my stories and be a better storyteller. Be a better storyteller and all that stuff. So like the media training is.
Yeah. You know what? We didn't get it right away. We got it after a few years that I was there, many years, maybe like 2005, maybe, but I remember Vince McMahon was part of it and he sat us down and he showed the video of him and Bob Costas.
Oh.
And he showed how Bob was just riling him up and got under his skin. And Vince was just acting like, you know, just was so pissed. And he says, well, you couldn't see off camera is basically they had a camera on me, but you know, Bob was rolling his eyes and shaking his head and just trying to get a rise out of him. So when he got done with the interview and Vince storms off after threatening Bob Costas and stuff, Vince was like, okay, everybody, don't do that. He's like, don't do what I just did. And what you want to do is get up, say, thank you for the interview. I appreciate it. And walk out. You don't need to engage in that. And it's kind of in life a little bit, you know, if you're walking away, someone's still chasing you and still grabbing you. Okay. Different story, but it's like, you want to engage, you know, hey man, have a good day. I'm out of here. You know, because you can't really, I'm going to walk away once. I'm going to walk away twice. I probably won't walk away the third time. But you know, you're pretty much, you know, the same way you can't beat me pretty much, you know what I mean? I just don't need to engage. And you're right, for sure.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Now, fast forward now we're getting back into wrestling, man. You got a little stint with New Japan, huh? New Japan
I'm
Pro Wrestling.
The shirt.
There it is. I
I'm
see it.
A shirt. You
I
know?
Love it.
how it all started, and I've been waiting to tell this story. I've always been cool with Lance Hoyt. Him and I came up in Florida Championship Wrestling in 2010. Fast forward to 2019 of last year, this New Japan flyer he gave to me. We were in the show, me and Lance Hoyt, September 2019 in Pomona, California, and he gave me this. And he said, come to a New Japan show, because I had told him, you know, I wrestled with WWE, but I've never, anytime I, I've wrestled all over the world, except for Japan. You know, I've never, anytime WWE did a tour in Japan, I was either on the UK tour or not on tour at all. And it's always been a bucket list of mine. So he told me to come to the show at the Globe Theater in LA, November 11th. So the show is at 7 p.m. I like to get to the building early. I was there like 5 p.m. to meet the wrestlers, to look at the ring, to see if I fit in with their style. And that was the one question that was going through my head thousands and thousands. I felt like a thousand of times. So I was in a, like a little VIP area that they had set up where I could watch the show from beginning to end. And that's the one question that kept rolling in my head. Do I fit in? And at the end of the show, I was like, man, I definitely belong here. So after the show, I stayed. I talked to Rocky Romero and I told him, you know, man, whatever I have to do, if I have to try out, I tried out with WWE and I earned my contract. If I have to go to the New Japan Dojo, I'll try out because, you know, I'm confident enough that they'll like me. And we had our talk, Rocky Romero and I, in November, and nothing really happened. 2020 hit. January and February, I started doing my first ever musical I had signed on to. Like you, Travel, you're doing different projects and everything. In January, I had signed on to do my first ever musical in New York. Wow. So
really? That's awesome, brother.
Yeah, living in California, I was out in New York for about 2 months working on this musical where I was singing, dancing, and acting. And I'm 36. At 26, I probably wouldn't have signed on to this musical because, oh, people who are in Broadway theater are gay and stuff like that. I was still thinking like mm-hmm. that.
But the world was. It wasn't just you. The world was.
Yeah. And I always tell people it was Chris Jericho that kind of, he didn't personally encourage me, but from his stint on Dancing with the Stars, I had realized, man, everything Jericho's in everything. He had did Dancing with the Stars. So it's like, you know, he's got his hands in everything. So that's when I made the decision to sign on to this musical. And I did it January, February, the best decision I ever made. So as we speak now, they're looking for a live streaming network, Amazon or Netflix, to pick up this musical about marriage equality, where it was theater and reality TV going head to head. It was great. It was a lot of fun. And I would definitely do it again in the heartbeat. So that was January and February. Then the pandemic happened. And then probably May or June is when Rocky Romero from New Japan reached out to me. And I'm like, oh my goodness. He told me about this opportunity of coming to New Japan. And I said, Rocky, can I get back to you? Because I've got to, I'm a man of my word. I can't say yes to him. And then I check with my family and they say, no, I had to check with my family. I had to speak from the heart. Mm-hmm. I said, Rocky, let me get back to you. Let me talk to my family. And my family ultimately blessed me to say, yeah, give it a shot. It sounds like a great idea. New Japan is doing everything correctly when it comes to COVID testing and all that stuff. I'll get tested every day if I have to. I don't care, you know, to do what I love to do, and that's entertain and wrestle. So my family blessed me. I called up, Rocky had texted me 2 days later, oh, have you talked to your family? And at the time, I hadn't talked to him. I said, Rocky, just give me till tonight. I'm going to talk to them. And I ultimately talked to them, and they said yes. And then I called up Rocky, and I said, yeah, let me join New Japan Pro Wrestling. So that's when we started doing shows in July and August, preparing for my debut which just happened last week, and it's been getting great coverage, great news. All the comments I read, it's the same thing. Man, I didn't know that he could adjust so well. Just from my one debut match so far, there's plenty to come. But a lot of fans and even Kevin Kelly said that I adjusted so well. I fit in with the style. And that meant the world to me because, again, it's been a dream of mine to bucket list dream of mine to do New Japan. Now I'm here and I'm delivering and the best is yet to come. I always say I have so much left to give. I have so much left in the tank. And yeah, man, like I'm having a lot of fun. And at first it was intimidating because I had just watched the stuff on TV, New Japan. And even as a kid, New Japan, All Japan, all that stuff. And I was intimidated in the style because I had been in the ring with some guys that did the style. And me being new years ago, oh, they just knocked me out. Like, man, like if you knock me out, how do I continue the match? We can have a solid match where we hit hard and safe places. But I was kind of fearful of the experience because I had been in the ring with someone earlier in my career that had that Japanese style and clotheslined me, knocked me out.
Right.
I'm like, where do you go from here? You know, I'm not trying to break you. I'm trying to make you. So again, finally joining the New Japan roster, you know, it was intimidating at first, even 18 years in the business. But something happens, you know, for me when I become a fan of these guys, because I was a fan of Kenta, Jeff Cobb, you know, Jay White, Tanahashi, you know, Kenta, these guys, I'm a fan of them. But something happens when I go from fanboying to now they're my competition now. I'm putting
you,
on my
you know what
gear.
It is? You know what it is something happens when you get punched in the face. When you get punched in the face, you can either curl up in a ball or you can explode and become that lion, that tiger. So that's what happens. And like, I love the New Japan style. That's like my favorite style of wrestling. But you get in the ring and, you know, the shit's on and you bring it. And it's a beautiful style. And you've definitely adapted well for it. You look like $1 million in there. I saw some highlights. I was like, wow, man, you got it, man. You're killing it.
Yeah. And I'm not, you know, I'm being physical and just what, you know, what a football player goes through. You know, I'm not trying to hurt anyone and knock teeth out or any of that stuff, but I'm delivering. You know, a guy that I wrestled recently that'll probably be airing in December, Chris Lawler, I believe his name is. And man, this guy is a MMA guy, but I had some great matches with it. And it was like, almost like it was like Kevin Sullivan and Chris Benoit. Like that's when you see it, it's just like, oh my good. Like when I'm in the ring with him, we're like, we want to kill each other, especially me, but nothing is where it's like I'm knocked out or he breaks my arm because he could. That was that fear in my mind. Man, I've never been in the ring with a legit, you know, MMA guy. You know, he could break my arm if he wanted to, but he was such a joy to be in the ring with. I gave him a clothesline and over the top and he turned into it. And when we were in the back, I said, hey man, I love how you turned when I gave you that clothesline. He's like, oh yeah, I took that from Kurt Angle. I'm like, yes, because it just looks so different. It wasn't pretty. I clotheslined him. He didn't just go over like that. He turned into it. The little details, I fell in love with this guy.
That's awesome, man.
This filthy brawl, I just fell in love with him. But yeah,
it's magic, man. It's magic, yes, bro. When you get in the ring with somebody, and it doesn't happen all the time, but when it does happen, man, it's magic. And you just back and forth, and you just the styles gel, and there's like nothing like it, man. And I would say that there's no high like it in the world, man. You get in the ring and
exactly
you have that great match, and the crowd's into it. It's you come back and you're just like, yeah, this is incredible.
And I know you've had plenty of those. For me, you know, sprinkling some good matches with, you know, quality opponents. But yeah, I'm having some quality stuff on New Japan, man, that I think the fans and the wrestling world are going to be very happy with. I'm glad I'm being given another opportunity to do what I do. You know, I can talk the way I want to talk. I can wrestle the way I want to wrestle, and just do me. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, I was getting jealous of some of my friends. I was getting jealous of you. You're doing big things. You know, guys like Heath Slater, he's doing great things. Rusev, you know, he's in AEW. All my friends are doing great things, and I had to be kind of hush hush about this New Japan debut. Now I'm happy. Now I can kind of toot my own horn now and represent.
That's awesome, man, dude. It's such a joy and a blessing to get that extra, that second chance, if you want to call it, and second and third and fourth and fifth chances.
Yeah.
But you get that another chance to go out there and do something that you love. It's special, man. It really is, you know. So I'm really happy for you on that.
What do you do
out of the ring? You know, we talked about wrestling, and obviously you're training because you look like $1 million, asshole.
Look at you, Chavo. don't get me started with your videos on Instagram. You pumping iron in the home gym. You look great. Health is wealth, baby.
That's when I'm feeling lean. I go, you know what? I feel pretty lean right now. I'm gonna do a video.
Yes. I always say, why hide hard work, man? Show it off.
That's true. Yeah, man. You're right there. What do you do outside of the ring? What are your hobbies?
Well, luckily, you know, I have to always knock on wood. You know, social media is a second job. So
it is.
Even before the pandemic, but right when the pandemic hit, I've been very lucky to get with different sponsorships like Celsius Official Energy Drink. A plethora of keto snack companies. I'm very big into the CBD and all that wellness stuff like that. So I've been very lucky to use my social media to, you know, as a way to, people always wondering, oh, what supplement am I taking? What snack am I taking? People are always curious. So for me to use,
I texted you a couple of times and said, what are those? Those good? What are those snacks, man? I want some of those.
Exactly. So it's just me personally reaching out to these companies, building a relationship. And of course, to make content, it's time consuming. Like some days I'll literally take a day to create videos, pictures, you know, captions. So all I have to do is just preload it and just when the time is right, hit send and it's shown to the world. So stuff like that takes time. So you got to get compensated. We're a business. Before people send me product and, you know, I'll share it, but, you know, I have bills to pay, you know what I mean? So a lot of these sponsorships have been taking care of me. So that's one thing I do. And also on top of the pandemic with fans and family and friends, I've been helping them with diets and workouts to kind of, you know, get them through this pandemic, how to do workouts outside, how to do workouts indoors. So that's my kind of way of giving back because I've been blessed enough to do my musical this year, to work for New Japan, to work with my sponsorship. So as a way of giving back, I've been helping others try to meet their goals. You know, I say health as well. I always say, I don't want to be one of those guys that's done with wrestling and like my hips are thrown off because that whole saying, if you don't use it, you lose it. So every day I'm on the ladder, the agility ladder, every morning, quick feet, slow feet, don't eat, you know? So I'm always moving. So that's what helps me stay in shape. High volume squats. I haven't touched a weight since March 15th when gyms
get
closed.
Out of so here. You look awesome, man.
Yeah, I've been doing, I'm leaner than I've ever been before. So I've been doing lots of squats, air squats, weighted vests, jump roping, ab wheel. I have my resistant bands, heavy to small. So that's what's been helping me maintain. And I'm happy. I feel good. I look good. And yeah, I just want 2020 to end. So hopefully 2021, I can go to Japan and actually compete in Japan because that's where it's at for me. I can die the next day if I can compete in Japan. That's my goal.
That's my favorite country besides the United States to work in is Japan for sure. What's yours? Do you have one?
Favorite country?
Yeah, what's your favorite country? Yeah, I'll restart that. That's my favorite country is Japan to work in outside of the United States. Do you have a favorite country that you like working in?
Well, I mean, I love the UK because anywhere in the UK, we go out there twice a year or so. So when we go out there, people love us, you know, they react to everything, you know, fans in the States. I love the fans in the States, but they're spoiled. They get a lot of us, you know what I mean? So you'll get some people sitting in the crowd like this, you know, just like they've been to their third or fourth WWE show. So in the UK, I always enjoy going over there. But yeah, Japan is where I need to go next year. So that's the goal. That's the goal. And plus, you know, they got good food out there and I wouldn't mind living out there either.
Yeah, man. It's you're going to love it, man. Japan's amazing. Great. You're big into respect and they're very a respectful country and it's awesome. It's really, I love every time I get to go to Japan, I love it for sure.
And I love the Japanese men.
Yeah. Right. the ladies, Japanese ladies for me, man, they're,
Yeah.
What kind of music you listen to, bro?
I'm an R&B head. You know, I love my relaxing music. Like probably people you would know, like Brandy, Monica, Luther Vandross, Stevie Wonder. Like the old timers, those are the ones I love. You know, I can listen to R&B when I work out before a match. It just calms me down. I always say there's a time and a place for the hippity hoppity and all that other stuff. I love all music, but R&B is just where it's at.
Yeah, R&B's are jam, man. Yeah, man. I mean, there's people like when I get into like a Maxwell or you know, an Erykah Badu, and they're just so Sade. They're just so chill, good. You know, you can get up to it or you can chill out to it. I love that, man.
And then, like, funny story, when I would drive Mark Henry around, like, at first when he started riding with me, the music just would, after a show, like, my energy's all up. I just need to calm down, you know? The music, he's got the hip-hop horn, and I'm driving. And I said, Mark, I can't listen to this. I said, if you want me to drive, you got to put on something relaxing. And he would always put on something relaxing for me so I could drive. And his wife would always, Jana would always, when we get to the next city, she would always call Mark and she would always thank me. Oh, Fred, thank you for driving. You know, I know Mark falls asleep at the wheel. So I always say I can talk crap about him all I want because I drove him around.
That's right. Big Mark, Marcus, I love him to death. As long as he doesn't grab you with those big ham hocks of his hands.
yes.
Legit, Mark Henry, the strongest man in the world, and legitimately he is. It's crazy, the strength, man.
Well, I would love, because he doesn't like when fans touch him like this. I would always see it beforehand at the airport where he's sitting down. I'm like, oh my God, the fans gonna do it. And I recorded it a couple of times because I know the fans start surrounding him like pterodactyls, him or the Big Show. But Mark Henry, it always happens. Someone touch him and he's like, hey man, get your hands off me. I'm not a pet. So every time. I remember one
this big ass guy with his head, he looks like the Predator, man, when he has long hands and his head is, man, I mean, that's somebody. And he's such a teddy bear, but if you get him mad, you know, he's like, hey, get your hands off me. Oh my God.
I remember WrestleMania after party, we were sitting at the table and someone came up behind him and like kissed him and he turned around and he went to go punch the person and it was Pat Patterson.
Oh my God.
Then Mark said, Pat, you lucky it's you. Because he was going to knock someone out.
Oh man, he'll kill you with one punch. It'll kill you, you know. And Pat, you know, Pat, oh, look at that thing. Yes. You go banana.
Yes.
Awesome. Hey, man, so we finish up this podcast always with a little bit of some rapid fire questions, a little bit like your podcast also.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, man, totally. So I'm going to throw a couple of things at you real quick and no right or wrong answers. Just see what, get the fans a little bit more about about what Freddie likes. So,
yes.
All right. All right. So, Hulk Hogan or Ric Flair? These are some tough questions, man. Okay, so I'm going to give you some, but.
Yeah, Hulk Hogan.
Okay, Hulk Hogan. Were you an NWO guy or a DX guy?
DX.
Nice. Were you a Randy Savage guy or a Ricky Steamboat guy?
Oh, Ricky Steamboat, number one, number one.
The best, right? Great guy, too. I love Ricky.
Yep.
Were you The Rock or Stone Cold?
Rock.
Eddie or Rey Mysterio?
Always loved Eddie. Always loved Eddie for his intensity, how just like, just everything, everything you guys did had snapped to it. And it just didn't look pretty. One thing about me, like I was told at one time, my stuff's too pretty, you know, too smooth, too smooth. And then years, that's when I first started. Now, years later, I always became a big fan of Fit Finley, you know what I mean? So it's good to be scrappy and like if something gets messed up, you know, not even messed up, you know, it just looks real, you know what I mean?
I agree. Eddie. I agree. Ray sucks. No, I'm just kidding. I love Ray. He's a family member.
Yes.
Some off-the-wall little wrestling questions. Were you a Waffle House guy or a Cracker Barrel guy?
Do I have to pick one?
You got to pick one.
Okay, I'll say Cracker Barrel, but Waffle House, like the Usos, they want to go to the Waffle House. Any Waffle House that we went to, I did not like it. It's very dirty in there. It is what it is. I was not happy. So when guys would want to eat there, I would be like this.
Mm-mm. And that for people who are listening, that's something that wrestlers were always on the road, and there's a lot of things that aren't open. So sometimes it's just Waffle House, and sometimes, you know, Cracker Barrel. Cracker Barrel, I'm a Cracker Barrel guy. But, you know, I don't think I've ever been to Waffle House earlier than 2 a.m. It's always, you know, last thing, you know, last resort. But
I'll eat a protein bar. I'll eat a protein bar, but not Waffle House.
Uh-huh. Nice. All right. Are you a Palm Springs guy? Are you a Las Vegas guy?
I hate Vegas. Anytime we went Vegas, like the gambling, like I don't gamble. So it's just like, I just don't like the atmosphere, the gambling. Like I don't like losing money, but I was just in, what was the other city you said?
Palm Springs, baby.
Yeah. I was just in Palm Springs two weeks ago. Yeah,
Palm Springs is my jam, man. I love Palm Springs. It's awesome, man. I gotta say it, man. The gay dudes know how to do it right, man. They're the best. It's the best food, the best drinks. They're the nicest guys. I have so much fun when I go to Palm Springs. Me and my wife go there, and we go, and it's just like it's we go to the pools and hang out. And it's so much fun. They're just like great guys, great people, and just that's our jam for sure, you know. And it's close.
Yeah. Yes. 2 weeks. I was very naughty there.
All right. Boxing or MMA?
MMA.
Nice. Are you a dog or cats guy?
Oh, dog. Dog all the way.
New cars or vintage cars?
New cars.
All right. And the last one here. Are you a sativa or an indica guy? Gotta throw it in, man. I gotta throw it in, you know? Come on. We're in Southern California. It's legal.
Yeah.
I got glaucoma. I just making sure my glaucoma's all right, you know? only for the CBD properties. That's it.
Well, for this sit down, sativa, because nice. I mean, I'm like this, right. You know? The indica put me to sleep, you know? So I like it both, man. I like it both, you know?
Right.
And do it responsibly, you know? I'm not one of those guys. Now, you're not going to see me like Snoop Dogg, you know? You're going to see me just doing it in my own way. So that's another thing.
Time and a place for everything. I always say that, you know? And it's, you know, I'm not waking up in the morning and having a shot of tequila, you know? I'm not waking up and smoking a bong. Yeah. You know, it doesn't happen, you know.
Hey, when I was with WWE, I was called the medicine man, baby.
See, I didn't know that. You just told me this on the last indie show that we were at. We were, I don't know, North Carolina or something. And yeah, I'm like, yeah, what do you mean? Medicine? Yeah. How come I didn't medicine, know man. This? We would have had a lot more fun. What the heck?
Medicine. Yeah, medicine, man. Yep.
I love it, man. So tell everybody where what you got going on and where they can find you right now.
Twitter, Instagram, at my government name, not Darren Young, at Real Fred Rosser, RealFredRosser. You can follow me on my podcast as well, Prom Bro Wrestling Podcast. And yeah, I have a YouTube channel, Fred Mr. No Days Off Rosser. I always say, don't die with the story and you tell it. So I'm very happy to have had this opportunity to chat with you again. You're one of the only guys that I follow on my Facebook when it comes to wrestlers, you know. Maybe a handful of guys, you, Titus, Kurt Hawkins, just a handful of guys that I follow on my personal account. So it's an honor to be on your new podcast. I'm very happy, very happy.
Thanks. No, thanks for being on it, man. I'd really appreciate you taking time out of your day. Pro and Bro Podcast. I've been on it. Really, really good. Really informative. I loved it. It was great. And that kind of gave me the idea to kind of throw this one out there a little bit. So I, my hat's off to you. I'll be forever indebted. And man, just thanks for taking the time, man. And sharing a little bit of your story and your life and what makes you tick a little bit with the fans. And you know, man, it's, that's cool, man. I'm glad that you were able to come out here and join me in this little journey.
Anytime, and congratulations on your success.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Always brothers, man. I always say once we're, you know, you've lived the life, the wrestling life, you're part family to me, man. Yeah. So I really appreciate you doing this and look for you in New Japan Pro Wrestling. I'm going to see you kicking ass over there.
Thank you, Travel.
And you live close, man. I know you're in LA, so you're up. If you're ever in Orange County, hit me up, and we'll go grab some food or whatever, right, my
Absolutely.
Friend?
Absolutely, absolutely, right. I will.
All right, respect to you. Thank you, my brother. I love you, and keep in touch, brother.
I love you, Travel too. Block the hate, baby.
That's right, block the hate always, and viva la raza. Get his pedal, not Charlie. Charlie. Yeah. Yeah.